In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
A Power 5 program has an opportunity to change its direction within a few seasons. And it's likely to whiff. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday. And Duke is a smart school. And there's a category there, okay? And it, so it's capital S, capital S, smart school. And if you take out your yellow legal pad and your black ink pen, and I say, all right, in fact, Dan, take out your yellow legal pad and your black ink pen and start writing down the smart schools who play D1 football. Just give me some of them.
Smart schools. Rice.
Bing.
Virginia.
Bing.
Michigan.
Bing.
North Carolina.
Oh, okay, great. Fantastic. He gave me, I think, a couple of private and a couple of public there. So, whatever. Actually, maybe three public because Virginia's public, aren't they? Yeah. Whatever. So fantastic. You know what the smart schools are. Now, it doesn't mean if you didn't go to a smart school that you don't have a good degree. I've told you there's another category where I went, giant public state school. All right, that's David, our engineer. He went to giant public state school. Dan, you went to private school, right?
Did liberal arts.
There you go. Boom. You go wherever you go. But I got a great degree. And you could even go to Snead State Junior College or Snead State Community College. I'm not even sure what Snead State is. I can't promise you Snead State is still open. But there are individual schools in every, you know, I've joked before, and I mean it harmlessly, but if you went to Louisville, you don't take it that way. I've called Louisville 13th grade. And that when you turned down West Virginia, but then in your next breath took Louisville, I'm like, what are you doing, ACC? You're just pretending now. But you can go to Louisville, and it's a perfectly giant public state school. And there are individual schools in there that are as fine an education as anywhere. But I've said, like at my alma mater, engineering, vet, there are individual schools, certainly journalism, there are individual schools that are, you know, University of Georgia journalism. Dairy Sciences at Clemson. But then there's the smart schools where it doesn't matter what you graduated with. It's just a degree, man, that somebody says, oh. Like I said, I went to Giant State Public School, which has a fine reputation. Dan's brother went to North Carolina. That's different. It's just different. You know it is. Duke is a smart school. And it has decided it can only hire a smart coach. Have you seen the three finalists or targets or maybes or possibles? Tony Elliott, Jason Garrett, Mike Elko. Now, don't get me wrong. If you're David's age, he's 27, 7, 8, 28. I'm always behind. You probably don't know a lot of. I've talked about Tom Landry before in reference, especially with Chris Landry. Not related, but I've talked about Tom Landry before. Tom Landry just invented stuff. Tom Landry was a defensive back. I don't think he played offense. I think he was a defensive back. They used to call him a defensive halfback for the New York Giants. And this was like early to mid-50s. And so he's like 24 years old. And if I'm remembering correctly, wasn't Vince Lombardi an assistant on that staff? Okay. Well, that's great. Tom Landry is in like his second year, and he's basically running the defense. So he just invented things. Anybody can be a great football coach. I would prefer you have the brain power of Tom Landry. And if you're David's age and you don't know a lot about the details of Tom Landry, just go Wikipedia your computer. I'm telling you, you will be fascinated by everything you see this weekend in the NFL, and you go, oh my gosh, that's Tom Landry. So Tony Elliott, who is he? He is the remaining half of the uber-successful duo Elliott and Scott from Clemson. Jeff Scott already went solo. Tony Elliott did not have a good season, or the offense didn't. Do we know anything about Tony Elliott other than, hey, it's not the same since Jeff Scott left? Do we know about Tony Elliott? There's a chance that when he was at – because he was a walk-on wide receiver. There's a chance when he was at Clemson, he was the smartest athlete there. He was an academic All-American, got a postgraduate scholarship, blah, 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 blah. He's just off the charts. He's the guy that when he walks into QT, he says, no, I don't play the lottery because of it. And he starts, you know, he's that guy. He's smarter. He's the smartest guy in the room in almost every room. And it's and he may be an just an uber head coach. Jason Garrett. He was Princeton, correct? Okay. If you've ever been around Jason Garrett, and I have just a couple of times, and I don't know him. I've never even spoken to him. I've been around him. I asked Dan because Dan, I mean, he's a Cowboys fan, media out there in Texas. He was like, dude, just about as he every it's a 4.5 to a 5.5. That's where he is, scale of 1 to 10.
Milk toast is what I said.
Jason Garrett at Princeton. Mike Elko, I think he was Penn. And now see, Mike Elko, I'm really looking forward to him being a head coach somewhere. The point is, if a university decides to get serious about football, it can do two things: amend academics and then spend its way into prominence. And that's true. You have to open the gates to enough athletes, you do, because you just need a bigger pool to draw from. And I'm not saying, you know, 4 years at Duke and I have no transferable credits. I'm saying just amend it a little bit, maybe. And then you can spend your way to prominence. That part's true. If you have access to athletes, see, if you're Mississippi State and you don't have those same academics, you can spend your way to prominence if you have the money. I'm talking about schools who can both get the athletes in and have the money to spend. That means if you're a smart school and you're not succeeding at football, it's because you have chosen not to. Look at the endowment as an ultimate measuring stick of your alumni wealth, not as something you can dip into, because that's not what it is. The endowment is the endowment, and then you draw interest on it and you use it to add to the endowment as well as spend. I'm going to give $1 million to my school, and I want to fund a scholarship with this endowment. So that's why I say it's just a general measuring stick. I told a story before. I did color on Rice Marshall, and I got my hand slapped because in the pregame I said, the biggest difference between these teams isn't their rank in rushing yards; it's their endowment. I think Marshall was $80 million, and Rice was, I don't know, $6 billion maybe. Stanford. Do you have any idea what they're endowed? $29 billion. $29 billion. You can't use that to build a new stadium or a recruiting lounge or give the head coach a helicopter, but that's a measuring stick of your alumni wealth. And at some point, Stanford decided, you know what? Let's succeed at football. And for the most part, they have. Notre Dame, $12 billion. They haven't amended academics enough. As Paul Hornig, in a very crude way, he had comments about that. But the point was, I want more athletes available to my head coach. The next school down that you say, Northwestern, and I'm talking about a school that either plays Power 5 football like Stanford, Notre Dame, and Northwestern, or is right on the edge, they're a group of five, whatever. Northwestern, $11 billion. Can't use it on a new stadium, can't use it on – nobody in college usually builds a new stadium unless you're UCF and you're playing them in that ashtray, the Citrus Bowl, and you're like, let's do our own thing. Northwestern, $11 billion. It's a general measuring stick of the university's alumni base. Do you know who's next? Duke. After that, Vanderbilt. After that, Rice. I'm talking about schools – that play either what we used to call D1 football, but they're one of the 130 that aren't succeeding in football. And I'm telling you right now, Duke, They're a smart school. Everybody on here is a smart school so far. Notre Dame, my gosh, smart school. Rice, smart school. Every one of these choosing to not succeed. They're not choosing to fail. I'm saying they're choosing to not succeed because they simply don't care enough. It is not, I'm not even going to say enough of a priority. It's not a priority. So as the ultimate measuring stick of your alumni wealth, that means that you have the ability to spend. You also have the ability to increase the recruiting pool. And I don't mean to devalue every single degree that's ever walked off the campus in Durham. I'm not saying that. You know, when you watch an SEC game and two-thirds of the starting lineup, they used to give majors. They don't do that ever anymore, do they? Do y'all remember that, Dave and Dan? It used to be they would show the five pictures and say, left tackle, and they would give his major. Do you know how much either what continuing education or early childhood education? Like, you'd be watching an SEC, half the offensive line be SEC, major, early childhood education. At Auburn, we called it cut and paste. You'd sit in the floor, pass the book around. I was in a class because I was an English literature major and I had to take all education classes. I sat in the floor, read from a book, passed it to the person next to me. Now, a couple of smart schools, Georgia Tech and Tulane. Dan, Tulane's smart school, right?
Incredibly.
All right. Georgia Tech and Tulane, they really chose to not succeed. When they withdrew from the Southeastern Conference, do we know why Georgia Tech did? Their Fruit of the Looms got in a twist over Bear Bryant and taking football too seriously. That's Bobby Dodd's words. And also academics. So you're giving too many scholarships to kids. It's just a football. It's like a tryout camp in August. And then Tulane? Anybody like one? We're on in Louisiana, so there's a yes here, and Mississippi, and maybe even Dan. No, show of hands. Who knows why Tulane left the SEC? Who knows? Tulane decided it could be Notre Dame. Not made up. Tulane president when they left in 65 or 6. Tech was the year before. I think it was 65 when Tulane left. Tulane president, the comment was, "We've become a national university. We should stop being limited by a regional football schedule." He said we need to play a national schedule. Instead of playing Mississippi State and Alabama, we need to be playing Southern Cal and Notre Dame. He said that. That's not made up. So they made the ultimate choice for that. And now Duke, hey, we can only hire the smart coach. I don't know. Go hire the $7 million a year coach. How about that? You know why you can do that? Because you got the money.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
My God, what an honor. Thank you for everyone that's shown up today. So many people that I had a chance to play with or coach or mentor. This is incredible. It's just the beginning.
Time to go to work. As Mario Cristobal's comments as he was introduced down in Coral Gables to the assembled media. I have to mention, and I try not to get into the muck and the Twitter and memes and, hey, let's point and laugh, et cetera, because there are just so many folks who feel the need to swing at every pitch. That there, it's easier to just walk around something, you know? You don't have to stop. But what happened with Miami yesterday, this is on them. The university's media relations corps, before Mario Cristobal came out, and he was either finding the orange tie or the green tie, because you always got to find the tie. Before Mario Cristobal came out, did we see the request? Not even the request, the demand. All right, Coach Cristobal will be coming out. We're going to ask everyone no questions regarding how he came to be the Miami coach, No, Dan, did you not see this?
That's ridiculous.
What was going to be the first question?
Why did you take this job?
How did this literally, somebody's like, all right, we're going to tell everyone here, because suddenly I saw like 15 tweets from people in the room. Normally, if it's stuff that's just, you know, taking needless shots at either a coach or a president or whomever, I'm like, I'm not even going to get into it. That's just amateur night. That's silly. It's not realistic. We're about to bring Mario Cristobal out here. You would ask with any coach that might be. So how did this unfold? What was the timeline? When did you first have contact? Just to fill in blanks with how it went with Manny Diaz? You're dang right it was going to be the first question. All right, Coach Cristobal, he's going to be out here in about a minute and a half. We're going to say, though, no questions about how he was hired, just his visions for the program. Okay, we're good. All right, Coach Cristobal, give it up. That's not made up. I've never worked in media relations in my life, and I know that that's not how you do it. I mean, did you raise part of the money you raised? You student interns now? Or is there somebody in the employ of the university in charge of that stuff? Dan, how are you?
The only other thing I can think of, and this is not drawing comparisons between the two, because one is an extreme example and the other one is just what you just mentioned, is remember when the Sandusky news broke at Penn State? They were going to make Joe Paterno available to the media, and they tried to tell the media,
right,
you cannot ask about it. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, no, like, he is directly in the middle of all of this, and you're going to try to tell us, hey, let's talk about Nebraska this weekend,
there
Coach, because
there are nuns protesting outside. You got an injury at safety?
Exactly. I mean, are you seriously going to be that codpiece in that room? Hey, Coach, tell us about Nebraska's secondary. We really want to know about the Cornhuskers and what they do on defense. It's ridiculous on all levels, and you need to be better than that. That's just completely not even living in reality. So that's on them, I guess, if they want to deal with that. But one way that they can get it back is if they add Joe Brady, because I am seeing this out here, and I look at a guy like Tyler Van Dyke and think a Joe Brady could really do wonders for this guy in terms of being able to help him out with the RPO game and be able to get that Miami offense to the next level, because I think if nothing else, there is an opportunity here. We see what is happening in the ACC at the moment. It is up for grabs, and if Miami can just get a little bit more explosive on offense, maybe all of a sudden we're talking about a 9-10 win team.
Yeah, and the other story is, where does Jake Garcia go if he goes anywhere? Again, it is free agency at the quarterback position, that is for sure.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Most wonderful time of the week.
Bottom of hour one on a Wednesday. Wonderful time. And I'll use this phrase quite a bit, and sometimes it's true. Like yesterday, I mentioned Butch Davis, and I said, close personal friend of mine. It's true, I'll say, with Butch Davis. With this next guest, it's so much more than that. He's a professional resource. Our next guest is actually a tax write-off for me because I pay for the membership. It is one of two places that I tell you it's worth opening your wallet for, LandryFootball.com. I want to welcome on the namesake right now. Chris, how are you, brother?
Chuck, doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Let's jump right into this. And Florida has its coach, and Florida State already had its coach. Now Miami has its coach. I've got a big picture to go to, but just tell me where Miami is right now with Mario Cristobal versus maybe a week ago, month ago, year ago with Manny Diaz.
I think what they hope, and at this point, what I see is the potential to maybe gain some traction in recruiting that they've lost over the years. Now, that's what Mario does well. Not that Manny didn't, but Mario that's his specialty. So that's kind of the mission, the reason why you bring him in. And so he's got to bring that back. That's what they're trying to do. It's why they're spending all that money. And he's been around places where not only you learn how to do it, but what commitment level, resource-wise, you need to have it work. Because he was there, and it's not just, well, he was there when it was working. No, he now knows how to do it from a recruiting standpoint. He did it at Oregon. He's going to have to do it here. And, you know, you can question his coaching ability, but it's all about recruiting. It's all about putting together a staff.
Well, he knows how to hire, doesn't he?
Look, I mean, he's done those things very well, and that's what they need, because there is a path there. I mean, it is a cleared path, and a bulldoze cleared path to go right to the top of that division in the ACC, and nobody bothers to get on it and ride the tractor through it, because it's just, you know, everybody's mediocre. And Miami lost their way. They owned South Florida for a long time. And Urban Meyer killed that. He went in there and got it, and they never got it back. Now, Florida didn't keep it, but Alabama and Ohio State, everybody else went in there. So now they've got to get that back. And I don't know how effective they're going to be, because, look, you let a lot of time go, and it's not going to be as easy to keep those kids in South Florida now as it was back then, because they're – everybody is aware of everything now. Hey, the place to go is, you know,
American Heritage.
Yeah, yeah. It's just it's Alabama,
St. Thomas,
it's whatever. You know, it's just those kids are going to want to go to places that they know more about and believe more about. So that's going to be Mario's job to convince it. Hey, look, this was once great, and here's why, and this is what we're going to do. So he's going to have to channel his inner Howard
Schnellenberger. That is a bold declaration, because he basically saved the program. And if you look at where they are right now, I mean, they're listing. I mean, they're just kind of, you know, floating along. If they were in a decent division, it wouldn't even be 7-5. I agree with you on that. So I want to expand it now then, because I have a big picture question. As I said, Florida State, they just got their new coach last year. Florida has a new coach last week. Different details, but I think it's the same arrogance that has left all three of those major college programs just trying to keep up. I think it was – and you and I have talked about this a little bit. There was an attitude at all three places. Facilities, Bill, we don't need any of that. We're going to put you in the league. And I think that they got very chest out, and all three of them have been paying the penalty for years now.
Yeah, and when you get behind, you can – you get so far behind that you never quite catch up. So if you're Florida State, you don't even look like you're competing on the same level as Clemson, facility-wise, in which you do. If you're Miami, same thing. And if you're Florida, you don't look like Alabama. You don't look like Georgia. Look, I went through it at LSU back in the day when nobody had facilities. Of the 10 schools, we had the worst. The Mississippi schools, Vanderbilt, had better facilities than we did. And it was that, well, you've won here. You've won 3 out of 5 SEC titles. Without it, why do you need it? Well, that was an era where it wasn't the biggest thing, but you do need it. And now you absolutely need it. So when they talk about, well, we're building this, and it's really nice now. And look, yeah, that's great, but they've been having this at other places for years and years and years. So you're playing catch up, and they're so far, it's like, you know, it's like a horse race, and they're kind of in the back stretch, and you're out of the gate, and you're at the first turn. So, you know, you're going to need some help, and you're going to need some patience, something no one has today, to begin to catch up. Just because you have caught up and are better than you have been over the past, say, 10 years, doesn't mean you're as good as the people you're recruiting against. And that's what they've got to, I think, correct, because it has been a lot easier for folks to leave the state of Florida and say, I'm going to go somewhere else, and because they're more of a commitment there, because when I go over there, they got more bells and whistles. Kids love bells and whistles.
Oh, gosh. Dabo decided that North Florida was like South Clemson. I mean, he did everything but open an SO club in Lake Butler. I mean, he was like, oh, we're going to own that. And he decided to go down there and make it a priority. And he's made a living. It's part of why they've been a championship team. Talk about Clemson, though, where we are right now, their coaching staff. Are they going to lose the other half of Elliott and Scott to Duke? Is he going to lose his AD? Or they already did lose his AD. Just walk through Dabo, because for a program that was built on stability and structure, that's not what it is today.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what he's going to do. I mean, he might go ahead and promote Wes Godwin on the defensive side. Well, we'll see. The offensive side, obviously, we'll see what Tony does. I don't know. The Duke situation is certainly a possibility, and maybe a strong one. this is going to be the challenge for him, for Dabo. We've talked about it. His ability to hire well and the stability with the money, and that has kept that program where it is. Dabo's a sales guy. I mean, he can sell guys, kids, and coaches on it, on the opportunity, and he delegates. But if you delegate wrong, or if you hire the wrong guy, then you're not all that successful and you take a step back. So as we kind of talk about, like, Miami and Florida State, that's one way to help you is if Clemson comes back to the pack a little bit. And I know this year they did. It could be more of the same. And you're seeing a lot of Dan leaving and, you know, the leadership. I think there is something we're going to have to watch, because it's not, well, Dabo's there, it's fine. Dabo's there, he's got to find the guys to make it fine, because he's not someone that can coach the coaches. He's got to hire someone and delegate, and that's a different hire. And so he's going to have the money and resources to do it, but getting the right guys are going to be – you got to choose right, just like in recruiting. You can get a lot of guys, but the sales part may be innately built in, but you got to make the right selections.
You know, just like we were talking, you know, American Heritage or, you know, IMG or, you know, Mark Richt and Saban, everybody found their way down there. Everybody found their way to Virginia Beach over the last about decade, too. Am I still thinking too much of the Virginia job, or is it the fact that they don't really own? Because I'm telling you, Newport News and Roanoke, all of that stuff, man. There was really good recruiting in that state, and now it just gets picked clean, and Virginia doesn't get it.
Yeah, you know, the only time where they've really made an impact in recruiting, getting those type of players, was when my good friend Al Groh was there and some of the member of his staff. They got some
– And Al Golden on that staff?
Yeah. You had quite a few of them, and they went out and got those guys. Now, Virginia – is one of the great, you know, public institutions academically, and they kind of consider themselves kind of a national. They consider themselves kind of Duke-ish.
Public Ivy.
Without that, yeah. You know, so I don't know what Brent's going to do. I think certainly that's what they have to do, but a lot of those guys really can't, you know, some of the guys in that area of which we speak are not necessarily the guys that would do academically what you would expect them to do at Virginia. Now, Virginia Tech has been a little bit more open to getting some of those guys. And so at least under Frank, they were able to, you know, no disrespect, but some of those guys were academically not the typical Virginia Tech students, but you could have exceptions. How much are they willing to do that at Virginia? Look, they hired Bronco because he could craft more out of less. How they go about it, my sense is that they're going to continue to do that, and they like that because they like being able to get that type of guy and that type of a profile, coach and student. So I don't know that they're going to change that, and that's going to determine the answer to your question of where they can go and you know, get some of those guys that that probably would help them football-wise but may not be ideally students at UVA.
Jason Garrett a thing for Duke maybe?
I don't know. I mean, certainly, I don't see that as a great fit personally. I think that's a little bit of a name and a little bit of a grabbing. To me, that's a place where you've got to understand college football culture. I don't know that Jason is attached to that as much. I think they need to be really careful and not overthink this. There's some good coaches that want the opportunity. I think they've made a little bit more of a commitment facility-wise, relatively speaking, for Duke. Go get your good coaches. So we talk about Virginia. Go get your good coach that can develop and get a lot out of a players and understand how to recruit and evaluate. I don't think that's Jason personally. I think there's some guys in college that would be better fits.
That is what you get from Chris Landry at LandryFootball.com. Among other things, we're going to take a break, come back, talk more college football next.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
I ain't coached a game in 20-something years, and even I know that it starts and ends with the quarterback. That used to be true in the NFL. It's true in college to a large degree now. And like Rich Rodriguez, worst thing he ever did at Michigan is he showed up, looked at Ryan Mallett, who was an NFL guy. He's like, yeah, get lost. I got nothing to do with you. I can't do anything with you. I'm going to run these plays with, like, Tate Forcier or Nick Sheridan. LSU has now lost both of its starting quarterbacks. Miles Brennan announced he was going to portal after Ogeron it was agreed he wasn't going to be the coach. And now after Brian Kelly's hired, Max Johnson has decided, I'm going to portal as well. I don't know if they met. Max Johnson's like, this offense doesn't fit me. Or Brian Kelly's like, yeah, you don't fit what I want. I can't imagine that's the case. He's an experienced quarterback with a lot of talent. Oh, yeah, and they got a bowl game where if Garrett Nussmeier takes one snap, it cost him his entire year. So unless they're going to run like single wing stuff from the 40s, I don't know what's going to happen there. Someone who may, from LandryFootball.com. Let's get back into it, Chris Landry. Chris, a lot to download there. First of all, what was the conversation and who decided, yeah, Max Johnson doesn't fit here?
Well, they did. He certainly met with Brian Kelly, that is, has met with a number of players. I would assume the quarterbacks were pretty high, if not number one on his list, depending on their schedules and, of course. So I would just take that as it didn't go quite here's my sense of it, is that no one's going to be promised a starting job. You're going to have to earn it. And I think sometimes in today's world, some guys think that I won the starting job. It should be my job, and somebody needs to beat me out of it. And, well, the new head coach is kind of the attitude, look, nobody, what is done here in the past is in the past, and I'm going to start it from scratch, and everyone starts over with me. And I don't think that probably went over very well and led to maybe a decision of – it's probably best if I move on. It'll be interesting to see what he can do with bringing in a quarterback and for Max, where he might go. It might consider going to Florida State, some other places. It's going to be interesting. The bowl game, it will be interesting to see what happens. But beyond that, I think what's real interesting is what he's going to be able to do. He's got Walker Howard coming in, but now you're talking about an opportunity for a true freshman to have a real big impact. I would think there'd be somebody that would enter into the mix, at least in terms of you got to have better depth than what LSU currently has. So, you know, Brian will work that, and he has a certain temperament and ideas of what he thinks quarterbacks should look like.
Staff getting fleshed out?
Yeah, it is. You know, Frank Wilson's a really good addition. He's essentially – I mean, he is, for people who don't know who Frank Wilson is, he's a longtime New Orleans native high school coach. He's coached – in a lot of places, including Tennessee with Lane and Ed and those guys. He was a head coach at McNeese State.
Had a UTSA gig for a minute, didn't he?
Yeah, and he I thought was a fast-track guy. He really did a good job over there before Jeff came in and has done an even better job. So he's going to be the assistant head coach, and essentially, without maybe saying it this to describe his duties, he's basically going to be the chief recruiter and kind of the face of LSU recruiting, because that's kind of his strength. Relationships. He knows every nook and cranny of the state. You know, Brian doesn't. Brian is a very good closer in recruiting. He's a very good overseer. But Frank will be the guy that's going to eat, sleep, drink every hour of the day recruiting, which Brian is going to be the head coach, and we will pick his spots on where he's going to be in recruiting and whatnot. And Frank's going to do the heavy lifting there, you know, so that's how it's. And then of course the rest of the staff will be filled out accordingly. So recruiting is going to be obviously a critical element of having the right contacts, and he'll have enough of those guys with, along with guys that he wants to bring in. You've seen him come in most everybody as a head coach wants to bring in their strength coach. There's no two people that need to be more aligned than the head coach and the strength coach. And it is almost always you bring your own guy. Now, for Les Miles and for Ed Orgeron, they were told Tommy Moffitt stays. But Brian Kelly has more control and more say-so that's been given to him. And, you know, it's not that Tommy didn't do a really good job over his career, but that position, because they're so closely entwined with the players all year long, that the head coach doesn't want to have let's get to know you type. You know, it has to be somebody that I know real well, because that's going to tell you exact who is on board, who are the workers. Who's, when you can't be around them, the strength coach lives with those guys. So those type of things are being implemented right now.
All right. Last week, I was correct in my my charge for Doug Marrone and O'Brien and Saban. I was like, if they can block it up on the right side, then Bryce Young will have a chance to be Bryce Young, and then we got a ball game. Now, I knew that's what they needed to do. I didn't think that there was a way to get that done. Just give me you explain it. You watched the game.
Well, neither did I. I didn't see it being executed to the degree that it was. The thing that I did know, and I think that maybe people may not be as aware of, a lot of them, is that the Georgia's edge rush pressure is not their strength. It's the A and B gap pressure that they're a little bit better at. I'm very surprised, because I thought defensively they would bring more pressure, manufactured pressure, but pressure nonetheless. They did a poor job of that. I thought that Alabama had a really good – they had greater emphasis with their backs and tight ends and protections. So they said, we're going to give the quarterback time, and we feel our receivers, particularly one in particular, that can beat single or double coverage. And if we give the quarterback time, we will be able to formation and get guys open, and we'll get some big plays. And they did it. I'm very surprised that Georgia gave them that time by not bringing extra pressure, because that's what A&M did. That's what LSU did.
Auburn.
That's what Auburn did. Yeah. You know, they didn't follow that. And on the other side –
And when did Auburn get in trouble? When they – all right, we're going to back off now. We're going to play some zone.
They did, and they got beat at the end. And I think that that's where Georgia got trouble. And I think that Georgia got into the – we're the better team. We don't need to game plan as much for this opponent. We just need to game plan for what we do well. And I think that they, in their belief that they were better, they look, you've got to play better, you know, and the fact that you dominate people, they did not adjust in game plan well enough for Alabama. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with enough time to get ready for Michigan. And then if again, in Alabama on the offensive side, they did a very poor job of scheming their receivers open. I didn't see any separation at all. So they didn't do a good job of trying to create matchups. It was kind of a, you know what, we're better. We're just going to do what we do and beat you. And not as much regard for the fact that maybe team was as good as they were. Maybe they got lulled into, you know what, we're really a lot better this year, so let's not screw it up, let's do what we do, which tends to be Kirby's MO. But he just underestimated how much better he is or not against Alabama, and I think it caught him.
Even two of the touchdowns, I remember, like Ladd McConkey, he made somebody miss and then just sprinted to the end zone, and Darnell Washington, that was, hey, I'm 6'7", and you're not. I mean, that
That's
wasn't
right.
necessarily a chess match sort of thing. Chris, we got a minute left. Tell people, if they make the choice I do, go to LandryFootball.com, say, hey, wait a minute, it says click here for 50% off. If they join, what do they get?
They get all the film room breakdowns of all these games. So it's the college game, it's the pro game. We like to say if it involves players, teams, coaches, schemes on the college and NFL level, that's what we provide for you. So, like, we'll have a breakdown of all of these bowl games. Right now, I'm putting an in-depth breakdown of the four playoff teams, roster analysis, everything. But all the bowl games, every single one of them, we'll have broken down for you. Obviously, all the NFL games, all the news and notes, all the coaching search information, everything you'd want from soup to nuts on football. Recruiting, obviously, a week away, signing day, the draft, you name it. It's all at LandryFootball.com. Take advantage of it. It's less than $10 a month, cheaper than that on a year membership. So take advantage of it today. Great holiday gift for you or someone that you love.
Yeah, and you know that marketing phrase, value at twice the price. It literally was twice the price, and it was a value then. It's the 50% off. You see the banner over there on the website. So, Chris, I appreciate you coming on, brother. 7 more days.
Thank you so much, Chuck. Take care.
All right, Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. Yeah, and it was scheme. I said on Monday, I got three of Saturday, the summary, three words. You got outcoached. That's exactly what it was. The players didn't suddenly, you know, I put on 30 pounds of weight this week, and boy, my technique got even better. No, it was a different plan and different positions, different spots to put those kids in. And then the kids went out there and executed. And so they get the ultimate credit, just a tremendous outcome for Bama.